Okay, so the last part of the Sutra of the Golden Light is really a kind of series of stories involving different characters, and they're all about our relationship with the world. So the theme in this part of the sutra is that the world becomes inseparable from the golden light of the Dharma, the golden light of the transcendental, which the whole sutra is based around. It becomes that the world becomes inseparable from the golden light when human activities are placed at its service. When human activities are carried out in a way conducive to the spiritual development of the individual, there is no separation between the world and the self. There is no separation between the world and the self. And there's quite a lot of different themes in this part of the sutra, which is actually the bulk of the Sutra of Golden Light. And the sutra uses the language of Indian mythology to express the themes. And I must admit that I don't actually find this very easy. So it's full of protector gods and goddesses and things like this. And because I'm not a Hindu, I find it a bit difficult. But it was explained to me when I did this study years ago that in the Buddha's time, it would have been skillful means. So it would have been portraying the teachings in a way that was easily understood by the people who were hearing them. But because I'm in a different country, 2,500 years ago later, I struggled. Okay, but I do appreciate the themes that it does have in it. So this part of the sutra needs to be unpacked a bit. It's not obvious when you first come across it exactly what it's trying to say to you. Well, it wasn't obvious to me anyway. So, and the themes in these later sections are about, represent facets of public and civil life. So the first section in this, the first part in this section, talks about the four great protector kings of the universe. Now, this isn't something we're used to talking about, but if we had a Vedic context, we would know immediately what this was about. And the protector kings of the universe are about promoting harmony and balance. The protectors promise to keep out all the forces in the universe which are hostile to the fabric of a positive and healthy society. They promise to uphold the moral order and protect those who promote it. So under the influence of the golden light, they will keep out all negative forces which will make it very difficult for people to progress on earth. So, and they will do that by upholding the moral order and protect those people who do promote the moral order. And a lot in this section it's talking about respecting the monks who will actually teach about the golden light and that sort of thing. So symbolism is about the promotion of harmony and balance and the protection of the world against negative forces. Later on in this section of the sutra, a goddess of culture emerges. Okay, so she's again is well known within the Indian tradition, and she too vows to uphold the golden light as a force for refined and cultured consciousness. So she's saying, what we need on earth, the protector kings are saying, what we need on earth to progress is harmony and balance under moral order. The goddess of culture is saying what we need is a refined civilization. Okay, nobody can actually make good progress unless there is some form of civilization, and that there will be learning, there will be education and creativity in the world. Another section talks about an earth goddess coming into being, and she promises to use the golden light to transform people's response to the natural world. And it's very interesting what she says about this, because it will strike a bell with a lot of people. So this will promote the husbandry of the natural world rather than its misuse, which I think is very pertinent to us these days. It will be, she will promote appreciation for nature for its own sake. So it doesn't have to be at our disposal. It doesn't have to be useful. Nature in its entirety is worthwhile just because it is nature. And she says she will promote the appreciation of nature through love of beauty. So it doesn't have to be purposeful. It can just be beautiful, and that's quite enough. And she will also bring about the spiritual understanding of the cyclic nature of life, the fact that things are born, they grow old, they die. And so she's saying nature will teach us about impermanence. And then we have a goddess of wealth who undertakes to respond to the golden light and to protect those who promote it. And here the emphasis is on generosity, right acquisition of wealth. So so it would be right livelihood. And this was something that the Buddha taught. He taught this in the Eightfold Path. So it would be a livelihood that would not do harm, and it would promote positive things within the world. And she also talks about the right creation of wealth as well, which would be, I suppose, not hoarding and things like that. So it's the keeping of ethical principles and values intact in the sphere of material life. And right at the end of this section of the sutra, there appears an instruction to divine kings. Now, I have a bit of trouble with the divine bit, but if I was an Indian 2,000 years ago, I would not have trouble with that, because I would think that people came into positions of power and wealth and comfort in the world because they had been good people in past lives, so that they would be a kind of they had earned this, you know. So this is instructions to rulers on the plane of main mundane existence, and their instruction is to remember the law of karma. Okay, so kings or rulers are seen as the upholders of the moral order. They are seen to reflect the positive forces inherent in the universe, that they will protect the doer of good deeds, and they will be expected to see unskillful deeds be punished. So the social order underneath these kings or rulers will be also the moral order, and a training ground for individuals. And you encourage them to become ethically responsible. So, and this section also portrays a very terrifying picture of the collapse of society if this moral order is not upheld. So it's very strong. It's just saying karma is really important. Nobody escapes it. And if you are in a position of power, like if you're a king or a ruler, then it is your duty to actually make sure that your subjects understand karma. And that would be through protection of those people who do good deeds and the punishment of those who have unskillful actions. The sutra explains that all these spheres of civic life are susceptible to golden light. They're susceptible to the light of the transcendental, the light of reality which manifests in the world through the teaching of the Buddha. And all these kings of various kinds and goddesses not only recognize the golden light, but they revere it and they promise to protect it. It's that important. So this section of the sutra covers the promotion in the world of harmony and balance, civilization, culture, care and respect for the natural world, the economics of generosity rather than greed, and law and order. And these are all arenas of public life that we are all part of. So I suppose, then I started thinking, well, how would I put this in my terms? So I suppose I would talk about, in terms of being on the side of the forces of harmony and balance, I would talk about being interested in conflict resolution, the promotion of harmony in the world sphere, not being afraid of difference, being able to dialogue with people who have different views from me. And this can be anything from sorting out a misunderstanding with a neighbour to, and I know some people do, go off and start negotiating. It's like the end of the Vietnam War. Thich Nhat Hanh, he was the person who promoted the round table talks to bring the Vietnamese War to an end, because this is what he was interested in. He was interested in restoring harmony and balance, and he wanted to do something about it. So this is something that we can be involved in at any kind of level. Okay, so another area of public life that's important is education and leisure. And we wouldn't be able to practice without having this. Gampopa, who was a medieval Tibetan teacher, said that two things that would stop us practicing as Buddhists fully was to be, I think he called it, born in the borderlands. Okay, so for him that meant living in a country without law and order, living in a country without civilization, living in a place where there was no education and learning and a refined society. So in fact you'd spend all of your time wondering where your next meal was coming from, and were you going to have a roof over your head tonight, and was somebody going to kidnap you or something like this, and you just wouldn't have the time to practice. So this is really, we do not want to live in border countries in terms of Gampopa's definition. To be able to practice on any kind of meaningful level and with being able to sustain that, we need to have a very kind of a well-ordered life. We need to have the time to be able to do that. So this is the promotion of a civilized society, positive cultural norms, promoting positive cultural norms, being caring about each other and being of service to each other. So the Earth Goddess was actually talking about ecology, about our relationship with the natural world, about how at times we think we dominate the natural world and we use it for our own ends rather than respecting it. And I suppose she's also talking about deep ecology, which is to see the spiritual dimension in the natural world, to see how much we depend upon it, and to have a kind of personal relationship with the natural world. And a lot of people have this. I mean, just people who love their gardens have this response to the natural world. And the Goddess of Wealth is talking about economics in a sense where we just don't have what we want, maybe. We just have what we need, which can be quite different. And she's talking about the protection of nature. She's talking about perhaps living in a sustainable way, so that we don't pillage and, you know, like rob other people of their livelihoods. I'll just like to say at the moment that I am not eating bananas that come from South America, and that's because I know they're cutting down rainforest to plant bananas. But I am quite happy to eat a banana that's come from the Windward Islands, where there are more traditional farms, and, you know, they're usually small farmers. So, you know, it's just a question of what I think is important, and I think that cutting down rainforest so that I can eat bananas is not sustainable. So I'm not doing it. not buying into that at the moment. So, about right livelihood, how do we make our money? Is it with kindness and generosity? Is it in a way that does no harm? It's very important that we consider that. And the divine kings, the people had to remember to protect the, to respond to the golden light through remembering the law of karma and promoting it. Here we're just talking about social justice. We're talking about rights. We're talking about treating people decently. We're talking about what kind of sanctions would you apply to people who don't treat people decently. And these are all issues that we are either benefit from or buy into or are responsible for in one kind or another, whatever kind of life you lead. You can't avoid being part of this or on the receiving end of it or something like that. So, and conditionality, pratitisamapada, which is the central teaching of the Buddha, which says that we are a result of the conditions around us, that we feed into those conditions all the time, means that we cannot act in isolation. I'd just like to point that out. We cannot act in isolation. We are irrevocably linked to all other beings and the world around us. So the law of karma says that all our actions will have consequences, and those are both internal and external. So whenever we take an action, it will have a result out there in the world, but it will also have a result on us. If we act meanly towards somebody, we're worried what they're going to say to us next time we see them. So we're a bit on edge. So we can't do anything that does not have an effect on ourselves and on the world. So not only are we interrelated, so we don't act in isolation, but we are a product of our actions. We don't have a fixed self. We are a product of our actions. We are the interplay between our actions and our thoughts and our speech and the world around us. So ethical responsibility is the basis for transformation of the self and the world around us. Bhante Sangharakshita says in his commentary on the Sutra of Golden Light that we need a much stronger emphasis on spiritual values in our relationship with the world, or civilization will collapse and mankind will destroy itself. In another talk, he puts it in a different way. He says, an attitude of withdrawal from public concerns into purely personal ones is one that is not worthy of a human being. It represents an abdication of responsibility. So he's talking here about ethical responsibility. And Bhante emphasizes that to accept responsibility for our choices and actions is absolutely crucial to spiritual development, and it is a mark of spiritual maturity. The sutra says that the spiritually committed individuals will orient all human activity towards the golden light. It will not only transform the world from within us, but that our thoughts, speech, and deeds will transform the world itself. So, what I like to call socially engaged Buddhism comes from this understanding of practice. It helps us to link the work on your own mind and the more social and public dimensions of compassion. Each and every situation we find ourselves in, locally or globally, is an opportunity for compassion, for generosity, and clarity and equanimity. And I'd just like to finish on a quote by the Dalai Lama. He said, it is not enough to be compassionate, you must act. There are two aspects to action. One is to overcome the distortions and afflictions of your own mind, that is, in terms of calming and eventually dispelling anger. This is action out of compassion. The other is more social, more public. When something needs to be done in the world to rectify the wrongs, if one is really concerned with benefiting others, one needs to be engaged, one needs to be involved. So this is what the Sutra of Golden Light is talking about. It's talking about the transformation of the self and the transformation of the world around us as not being separate. They are all responsive to the Golden Light. They are all responsive to the transcendental. They are all both responsive to our practice. And I think I'd just like to leave it at that.